We're back at it, folks. Go ahead.
Okay, through the chair, I would like to talk about policy on LU7. So timber production. So right off the bat, when I would like to change that initial talking point of to maintain and protect timberlands for timberland long-term production. I would just shorten it and put to maintain timberlands for long-term timber production. Okay. Anytime I see the word protect, it usually means anti-production.
How about to manage?
Manage would be fine. To manage timberlands for long-term timber production. I mean, that is the goal, and it's direct and to the point. I agree with that.
I like to manage it better myself.
Yep. So that was just one. And then in LU 7.1, again, timberland preservation. I personally know this is talking about timber production zones, TPZ, and I know sometimes it's considered a some counties, et cetera, call it a preservation zone, but really it should be timber production because the message needs to be hit home. If you have TP zoning, you are obligated to harvest your timber. This is not a preservation like a park. This is, think of it as like Williamson. You have a legal requirement to now harvest your timber if you get that tax break. So that's part of the zoning. So I would like to see, instead of timberland preservation, call it, you know, if you needed a header for LU, just call it timberland production.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What if there's no market for that?
Well, that's a discussion remain to be seen. But when you look at the statute, which of TPZ, which I have looked at numerous times, there is a requirement to harvest timber. That is part of what the management plan is supposed to line out, is the growing and harvesting of timber. Now, the management plans don't always say a specific they don't always say a specific decade or a timeline, which I think I've expressed criticism on our TPZ plans. Mm-hmm. They're very, and rightfully so at some level, flexible, because I believe you definitely need flexibility because there is no market right now. But there's often not enough information in them either.
Yeah.
So we don't have structural, a lot of our timber is not structural, right?
No, that's not true. We do. We didn't have any structural dimensional mills in Siskiyou County, but all of our wood that was going to go to 2x4s, we shipped to Oregon or Shasta County.
Not pine.
Yeah, pine.
Pine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe not right now because the markets are in the tank, but no, we've shipped. I mean, that's where pine goes, is usually Sierra Pacific.
Excuse me, I have a general question.
Yeah, go ahead.
As far as timberland goes, who takes priority? Private property owner, state, or federal lands? Or is there a difference between the three when it comes to timber harvest plans?
Are you talking about priority of what?
You have to harvest your timber.
Well,
who determines that?
I can tell you. If it is a federal, they are under a NEPA process, and within each forest, they are supposed to have a forest plan. And so in California, we have the Northwest Forest Plan.
Okay.
It sets out the growth and harvest of that those lands. Now it's sued and we don't meet those minimum thresholds, but there is a plan and that's federal, completely separate. Now on the private landowner's side, it depends on if you are over 50,000 acres or under 50,000. If you own over 50,000 acres in California, you are required by law to prepare what's called an option A. It's a long-term sustained yield plan. And in that document, you evaluate every acre of when you're going to harvest and when you're not going to harvest. And so they are on a trajectory, and they are required by law to harvest. Now, you can amend it and make changes. If you are under 50,000, which is the bulk of them, again, it depends on the type of plan. Some landowners have no plan. They're not zoned TPZ. They harvest whenever they want or need. Others have other documents like a non-industrial timber management plan. That sets a general guideline of when they should harvest, but there's no hammer to make you harvest in those plans. So it's kind of a multi-approach.
So carbon sequestration, are they out of the TB timber
like
zone?
Carbon sequestration, like a conservation easement?
Yeah.
No, those are done in TPZ a lot.
And they still require them to harvest?
Yeah, you can't have a document over TPZ that says you can't harvest because that's contrary to the state statute of what TPZ is.
So what if you got a great big entity that's come in and bought hundreds of thousands of acres, and currently they have no timber harvest plans in place, California Book. They're harvesting carbon credits with no real market left.
Mm-hmm.
How can the state say, okay, now you've got to go harvest?
Thank you.
Where's the incentive? Why don't they just get out and rezone the land?
I would say they're probably, I think there would be a discussion on you should rezone out of TPZ.
Right.
Because part, just like Williamson Act, you're getting a tax break to be TPZ, and then you're assessed a yield tax. But it's kind of a developing issue. I don't know that there's any answers. I think right now, because there's such a promotion of carbon credits, people kind of back off. But the state overarching law for timberland is maximum sustained production, MSP.
We're not seeing that either.
And we are not seeing that. But that is like the laws on the books, is they encourage maximum sustained production of wood products. But I would just say for the county's purposes, like some of that's like hot potato stuff, but just not say preservation, because then it does go even more down that road of we are preserving this landscape, locking it up. When I hear the word preserve, I think of like a wilderness area, like it will never be locked. And that's not what TP's.
It is happening right now.
No, but that's not what TP zone lands are.
But those lands are TPZ right now.
No, I know.
So how does that, when those are being locked up under conservation, whatever you want to call it, whose responsibility is it? The county?
County assessor.
To get in the middle of that and go, wait a minute, we're time out, we're going to retax this.
Yeah, land bank, because that's, you know, it's there's not been as good, this is just my opinion here. Now that I've owned ag land the last number of years, and I see, like, and I'm in Williamson, and I see that annual reporting of, you know, we have to give our financials and how many head and where that income is derived from to ensure that it's Williamson. There's really not that process on the TPZ. I think they generally leave it to the county assessor to determine. But it is on the books that to be timberland production zone, you are required to harvest, because the county doesn't get that differential in timber tax until they get their percentage of yield tax, which the yield tax is based on an assessed value of the harvested volume by species, and their quarterly assessments by species looking at the market. But a portion of that goes back to the county. They used to have an ad valorem tax back in the day, and that was just, it's part of the assessor's role. As your timber gets bigger, theory is it's worth more. I would argue now it's harder to sell because there's no large mills. But back in the day when we had a viable industry, it was worth more. So people didn't want to maintain large timber volume on their landscape because they got taxed every year higher. Where that's in the 70s, that's why they switched to the yield. And then hence TPZ.
I remember that, and I think you mentioned this before. What would concern me is that somebody would from out of the state buys timber here, sets aside, receives credit for carbon credit, and does nothing.
Mm-hmm. And that's a real
And then you've got overgrowth, and then you've got, here we're back in the circle where this is.
That's a real live issue. I think, you know, counties, especially ours that are timber heavy, you know, my advice was they need to assess how TPZ, like, it's real easy to go back and look at when's the last time this property had a harvest.
So
you know, maybe there needs to be an exercise doing that. And that's why partly with some of the new TPZ projects that have come before me, I've been very hard on them. Like, I'm a full private property proponent.
You bet.
That's like first and foremost. But then also recognizing what TPZ is for our county, because I live here too. Like, there's got to be, you've got to hold up your end of the deal. Because I am a rule follower ultimately as well.
So to get money for the carbon credits, you should have to have a timber harvest plan. Right?
Well, not a timber harvest plan. They usually require a management plan.
Okay.
And a lot of them do...
Or you get no credits, right?
Yeah, and they do require a management plan and volume estimates. And the ones I've seen don't necessarily preclude timber harvest. They limit. And there is no threshold for... TPZ, like you have to log 10,000 feet to the acre per year. There is no threshold. It's just that intent that you will be harvesting timber. It can't be a complete no harvest agenda. So as long as the management plan sets up for future harvest, I don't think necessarily they're in violation. But it is a gray area that I think is evolving in the last decade with so many projects going that way. And just the markets, I think, too. You know, the reality is, I mean, good luck selling pine. And if you have pine stands in Ponderosa, there is no revenue. So, and it's only going to get worse on the pine. So, I mean, but it is a topic kind of being talked about in certain forestry sectors. But I just wanted to bring it up on this with, instead of timberland preservation, just title it timberland production.
Okay.
Because I think that then ties back into timberland production zone would just be my...
Do you see that on the left it says timber productivity preservation? Would you prefer that or just timber production? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just timber production. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then the parcel size, that gets back to just the minimum parcel sizes that are required in TPZ, yes, based on site class, etc. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And
so since you're on 72, it's kind of a mute point here on April 15th of 2026, but being an eternal optimist, looking at the last line, commercial timber production, and I'll defer to Danielle on this. Is commercial really necessary as a word there, or would it encompass more accurately timberlands to support continued timber production? Because if we have this discussion with agriculture, and what is commercial agriculture? You have family foresters who maybe they have 100 or 500 acres of TPZ, and periodically they harvest. I do not consider them commercial, but they are doing viable timber production, mm-hmm, whether it be for firewood or to go to a specialized mill. Mm-hmm. And so I would defer to Danielle, but the word commercial there, personally, I think it could be stricken.
I agree. I think just, you know, from the county's perspective, with this policy is like you're just encouraging parcel size for timber production, rather there's a harvestable project or a sellable product or not. And I think just one more thing to add with this whole TPZ, you know, this was done in the 70s. I don't think there was ever a thought in the world that you wouldn't be, you know, practicing forestry without a commercial product. And because I know in my 35-year career, I never thought I'd be practicing forestry without a commercial product. And here we are. Like, I don't sell wood anymore. So I think to allow flexibility, we should take the word commercial out, because there are other emerging markets. I mean, yes, they may be commercial, but we need to leave all options on the table.
Shipping in biomass is not even on the horizon.
No. Got to get through the PUC. Public Utilities Commission has that issue contained. If they would allow certain definitions and not weigh the costs of biomass purchasing relative to subsidized wind and solar, I think we would look better, but it's considered expensive to put on the grid, so there's resistance on buying biomass fuel or electricity.
Well, it is maybe right now, but guaranteed in the future.
I hope so. That would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So page 34, this is one of those kind of required sections in the land use element, really. We're just talking about community engagement and how the county interacts with other agencies. The changes on the right-hand side are very similar to the what was proposed on the left-hand side. Just wording was changed. If you look, it just, for clarity, if you look at the very beginning, right, to coordinate planning efforts informed by and responsive to, we just shortened that to coordinate land use planning efforts with local communities and regional partners, you know, just to be more clear.
Yep. I have a question through the chair on 8.3. So on 8.3, it says the county shall provide public notice and engagement opportunities through multiple communication methods. So like this meeting, when I see engagement opportunities through multiple communication, that engagement part to me says in person, are we back to Teams meetings? No, but that's how I read that.
Well, that's, if you look at the left-hand side, that's where they were really pushing towards, right? Including digital and print media and publicized and, you know, people without home computers. We wrote it in a way where it gives flexibility to the county based on its funding and perceived needs.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you're welcome to make it more specific, but I think, like I said, if you do, then you're bound to allow Zoom access, all these other things, as opposed to leaving it open for the county.
So this allows us to keep it open.
Yeah, and then, okay. Right?
Yeah.
That's how I interpret
it. That's how I read it.
Okay. As long as it allows us flexibility, it's just when I see the county shall, you know, in my world, if I use the word shall, it's a requirement. Yeah. If it's the county may provide public notice and engagement opportunities through multiple communication, you know, right now we have one way to communicate with this commission. So if we're considering to have multiple engagement opportunities, and it's a shall, I read that we have to go back online.
I would say we have multiple right now because people can come here in person. They can also submit written correspondence.
Okay, I forgot about the correspondence. Okay. Okay.
But rather than binding the county to require, you have to have online access with this set of amount of cameras. You have to have closed caption. You know, yeah. Just if you look at their alternative, right, you have to include Spanish. People without computers or the internet.
Yeah, no, that's...
Again, those are all good social justice policies, but if we don't have the funding or the population or the perceived need, it might be different if we had a request from the public, right, saying, hey, you know, we have a large population that's interested in planning commission meetings. you know, that isn't being met, then you guys might want to consider that. But not knowing that, and no one saying there's an unmet need, it doesn't make sense for us to spend the money on something.
Yeah, and that's really what I was getting at with making sure that we're not required, because, you know, some of our technology can be expensive to purchase, and I just don't want to, we're on the same page.
Question on 8.4.
8.4?
Mr. Phelps.
That one is poorly written. Oh, no, it says recommended deletion. Good.
So, true deletion, because here in council, I'll rely on council's input here. There's a reason why 8.4 is in here. There is an avenue legally when an activity is being proposed on state or federal lands where the county can inform fed or state entity that they are requiring coordination on said project. In lieu of having that ability to trigger coordination with a federal or state agency, the county simultaneously must also have in their policy that they will coordinate with the appropriate federal state agency on projects. And so I have a real tough time seeing this being quote unquote deleted.
So where it says recommending deletion, it is deleted, but it's referred to in 8.2, sir, if you look right. It's just some of their policies were BPs, if you look, 8.2 on the right-hand side, right? Interagency coordination and public participation. We say we're gonna coordinate planning efforts with the cities, special districts, tribal governments, other public agencies, and community-based organizations. So other
public- You need to specifically state
federal
and state.
Okay.
Because if we do not have it in county policy, then we don't have the footing to go to U.S. Forest Service and say, we're requiring coordination on this project.
So Commissioner Fowle would say other public agencies, including state and federal agencies, comma, and community-based organizations, as appropriate. So we put as appropriate. That gives us, like, we're not required for every project, but only when the county feels it's appropriate. Okay.
Council, so, but, do you think that still holds the same power? Does that meet the requirement for the reciprocity?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, state the obvious, there's times in state or federal law where consultation has to take place one way or the other. That this goes beyond, that this would suggest something beyond, I think it's probably about, you know, the best we can do. I mean, we can't. We can't necessarily bind the federal government with one of our procedural ordinances, but otherwise, you know, this is fair and the best I think we can do beyond the mandatory stuff.
Okay. Mr. Phelps, could you reread
8.2, sir?
As changed, please.
Interagency coordination and public participation. The county shall coordinate planning efforts with cities, special districts, tribal governments, other public agencies, including state and federal agencies, and community-based organizations as appropriate, and shall provide reasonable opportunities for public participation in the planning processes consistent with applicable law.
Okay.
So that applicable law covers everything.
Adding fed, state, that works.
Okay.
Thank you.
So turning, if there are no further questions, to page 37, this is a required section in the land use element under state law. We are required to consider equity in land use decisions. What staff did was considered for deletion anything that went beyond what's required by state law. So that the county would only have to be obligated to follow state law and nothing more in this respect. Not to say the county couldn't go beyond it, but it doesn't bind the county to have to do anything beyond what's required under state law. And if you look on the right-hand side, we're basically saying, right, the county should consider in planning projects, you know, whether there's, you know, when we place public facilities, whether that's serving the entire community of the county, or are we only putting hospitals in certain areas? We want to make sure that we are looking out for the whole of the county. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the purpose of that.
So I have a question on 9-1. Council may need to weigh in here also. It's going to determine how the word facilities are defined. And I say this because this came up back in the mid-90s, early 2000, and it was a discussion on the public's right to access the river from a public road. And the river is, they would have to cross private property to access said river. And there was an argument made by a couple entities that the river was public. The road was public. And there was a push by one individual to try to require County Public Works to improve turnouts, provide turnouts at bridges where it crossed.
Like Black Bridge or something.
Black Bridge, Horn Lane Bridge, Fay Lane Bridge, Red Bridge, Meander Bridge, etc., go up and down the Scott. And this was focused on the Scott so that these groups could park at the bridge, go across private land, thinking it was an county easement associated with the bridge, and go into the river. And there were some nefarious things going on because of this. The supervisors at the time, and Marsha Armstrong was a supervisor at the time for us, fought long and hard with county council to support public works because it opened up a Pandora's box of potential liability that if someone was hurt accessing the river via public road, county bridge, and or getting hurt on private land getting to the river, who accepts that liability and put the kibosh on it? With that backstory, I now come to 2026 in this language, access to public facilities, equitable access, infrastructure when making land use decisions. I would like council to weigh in and maybe needs to think about this for a month and come back to us with language. We put a stop on it in the 90s. I do not want to reopen that box to where we have an entity or two that makes a push because of our land use that all of a sudden the county is saying that the county is going to provide access to a waterway via county road, county bridge, crossing private land, and opening up that liability Pandora's box again, not only for the private landowner, but also for the county. And so I would like that to go back to the office and have council take a close look at that, not only to protect the county, but to protect the property owner who owns the land next to the county bridge, county road, etc.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll take a look at that.
Okay.
Also, Counselor, why the word justice.
That's the state language.
Justice.
By law, that title has to be in here.
And I don't remember state law off the top of my head, so I specifically put it in here so we can refer to it.
It's a section that...
Government Code 65, I specifically put it...
Okay, but I mean...
So I'll look it up. But I would say, Commissioner Fowle, because it's a state law, it's likely public facilities and infrastructure is defined under state law. And if it's not in our zoning code, we have an entire section of where we've just created a separate section. Rather than have definitions in different areas, it's just one section with all the definitions. So it might make sense in that zoning code definition to include what this county considers to be a public facility and infrastructure.
Yeah, I'm not trying to raise this to get attention by people, but I would like some guardrails on what facility means and access to entails, so that we don't have to go back and revisit what we already have dealt with once.
Isn't the term navigable?
Yes.
Pardon that.
Through the chair. Under the government code section that discusses environmental justice, there is a definition regarding public facilities, so I'll just read it into the record. Public facilities include public improvements, public services, and community amenities as defined in subsection D of section 66000. So let me go to that. Let's see.
So under that definition, that would include a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here real quick.
And a community activity, etc. Well, whether it be the Shasta or the Scott River, they're both identified in both communities as places of interest.
Yeah, hold on.
Even though they flow on private land that we pay taxes on, even when it's dry.
I would point that the purpose of this law is just to ensure, like it says in the title, right, environmental justice. So we want to make sure in the county that not all the swimming pools are located in Aetna, right? We want to distribute, make sure like Montague gets a pool, that sort of thing. So if we're doing road improvements, we want to make sure each community is getting its fair share of road improvements. And so they're really, that's the emphasis. In terms of that, and I hate to...
I do not disagree with you, Mr. Phelps, but there are individuals. You are a logically thinking person. We have individuals in our community that would take this language to another avenue. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying to put the guardrails on. Did you find it, Haley?
Reiterated the same verbiage, which is public improvements, public services, and community amenities.
And so that's why I have the concern, a community amenity, both valleys consider the rivers amenities.
Sure.
Well, public in the overall sense that's generally used, right, public funds, right? So that's what they're thinking, what usually when they talk about government projects, right, public facilities would be something that was created with public funds, right, the road, the courthouse, that sort of thing. The river is a community asset, it's under public trust, but whether it's a public facility, the county does not maintain that river?
No, but the county maintains the bridges, and that's what I'm getting at. Because the next time that Horn Lane Bridge is scheduled for an update, that's when the nefarious person
looks at
this language and says, you know what, since the county is updating Fay Lane or Horn Lane Bridge, because it's using public monies, we want parking, we want a trail, we want a gate, we want access to said river, because public dollars are being spent on this bridge. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Well, that's a reach. That's a reach.
They tried it in the 90s.
Well. Yeah.
And it went to court and the county won.
Right.
But that's not to say that we're not going to have to revisit that, and I'd rather be use prior and proper preparation to prevent piss poor performance.
That's a good term.
We'll define that in the
yeah.
So 9.2, again, this is just the common sense stuff, right? When the commission is looking at, you know, where we should put the next landfill, we're not putting it in the same location or the same type of neighborhood.
A new landfill?
I'm just giving examples.
Okay, I said, really? We just...
Yeah, yeah. And then 9.3, same thing. It's
we'll
not
go
that...
back to 9.2.
Yes, sir.
The last phrase in red, pesticide application or other activities that may adversely affect nearby communities. This section, titled Environmental Justice, right? Land use and environmental justice. When I see specifically worded pesticide application, we already have to get a permit, have to get our applicator's license, we have to file on the state website before we apply. We have to allow the public to comment in regards to our potential application of herbicide or pesticide before we can apply said pesticide or herbicide.
And sometimes a herbicide recommendation by PCA.
And so...
I think that 9.2 is just reiterating what you're already doing, just what you said, right? Because we're just... consider potential disproportionate health and safety impacts. And that's really that whole process, right? You need to go to the air quality
Ag
control
board,
Ag commissioner. Maybe certain days you shouldn't be spraying, right? Because it's, you know, the whatever information
well,
they have.
We can't by law. But we already have a law dealing with pesticide application. And a state agency, correct.
That deals with talking about.
That should not be in here. I would support striking pesticide application because we have state and local laws that are already in place. It does not need to be in our county plan.
Yep. Well,
but not the whole thing, just pesticide application.
Just pesticide application needs to be pulled. It is not, which one of these things is not like the others? Pesticide application.
Well, and I would add, when I read this, my first comment was, or my first, where my head went was, because of the pesticide application and other activities they may adversely affect nearby communities, is this contrary to our right to farm? That's immediately where my head went, was like somebody could make the argument like, pesticide application, you know, we know that one is... a big bugaboo in a lot of people's mind, and other activities may adversely affect. It was like, well, a lot of people don't like cattle grazing. A lot of people don't like X. So where is that boundary with our right to farm relative to this piece? Because knowing this language, I've seen a lot of, and when I say this language, this environmental justice section, it's usually hammer to stop some type of commercial production. So I, looking at it through that lens, I understand the idea to allow like access, you know, equitable access. We don't want to put, you know, all of the mills or refineries just in one neighborhood. I understand the idea. But I also don't want it to impact what we already do here because of how it's written. So I don't know how to rewrite that, but I definitely would take that pesticide application out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then other activities that may adversely affect nearby communities.
Rather broad.
That was literally what I was going to say. It's like, that could be anything.
Chair. It's good to remove the pesticide application because it is nuanced. And maybe we just keep hazardous materials like and or industrial uses, because that does, I think, better speak to the general intent that, yeah, of course we don't want to put a ton of, you know, refineries in one neighborhood, you know. Mm-hmm. So, because there's that general understanding societally, so.
Could I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Could you just simplify the sentence and still get it the same intent? And just simplify it by saying, the county shall consider potential disproportionate health and safety impacts when reviewing land use decisions, period.
Okay.
And then all the other stuff, if you guys agree, all that other stuff is already evaluated when they go through the CEQA process without highlighting anything else.
I'd agree with that.
Okay. Do you want to also remove that may adversely affect nearby communities?
Yeah, I would just stop it in the decisions.
Okay.
Yeah, I would go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about 9.3? This one, again, is just our zoning code. I would just say,
I don't see that.
We're just saying, yeah, you know, we're going to zone to allow, make sure that a grocery store, if it wanted to open, it could open in a town because there's available commercial zoning.
I don't see anything at first glance with that one.
Okay.
In a town, you say?
Well, just an example, right? We want to make sure the land around Greenview, there's adequate commercial zoning to allow for businesses, that sort of thing.
Yeah, for the food desert piece. Yeah.
We're not saying we're going to open a grocery store, but if you think you could make a go at it, you know, the zoning will allow it. How about 9.4?
My next question is on 9.6.
Okay. That's a requirement, sir.
You know, I get that it's a requirement. I'm looking at the words in appropriate zoning districts.
Yes.
And let me just give an example. We have two child care facilities in Scott Valley that are not within incorporated areas.
Mm-hmm.
Both are on rural residential ag.
Mm-hmm.
The state law actually technically says that shouldn't happen, but our county is allowed to do a waiver because we don't have enough child care facilities in Scott Valley that waiver allows those two facilities to operate on rural residential ag. And whether we are in Butte Valley,
mm-hmm.
whether we are in Shasta Valley or in Scott Valley or downriver, the state law has a pretty narrow vision of what districts child care facilities can operate on. And can we, this is, instead of making sure we have guardrails on, this is one, let's make sure that we have.
We've already done that.
Open enough in land use to allow for that to occur.
Yes, and through the chair, I think the connection as well, going back to our housing element that we updated last year, maybe the year before, expands a little bit on child care facilities, because there is a requirement with housing element law that if you have a zoning district that allows for a house outright, you also have to allow for child care facilities outright. So I think that's the weird nuance with rural residential, because obviously we allow for houses, but there's an ag component, so therefore the child care facility could comply with that zoning district.
And that's what we did to follow Director Lang, is we changed the zoning code to allow it for all in all the residential
that
districts.
We allow for homes,
it should be a permitted use.
Yes.
Correct, it's allowed by
right. Not allowable, it's permitted.
Depending on the scale.
Okay.
Right, I think there was, we...
There's a number of children or something.
You know, like 10 kids, or, you know, but it, once you get to a certain scale, it makes sense to be like, no, you should come in and talk, because you need additional parking and...
Both of these, I think, are 10 or fewer.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, it's around that number.
The water troughs have to be special water troughs that only run water if the animal's touching the float.
Mm-hmm.
Fencing has to meet certain requirements, et cetera.
Sure.
Yeah, you've got to go through the checklist, but it is allowable with a permit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 9.7, 9.8, and 9.9 were all deleted because they were incorporated into 9.2. Well, not 9.2, but I think they were referred to in a different...
9.2. You have in, or not 9.2.
In a previous section, we talked about, 8.2.
Yes.
So it didn't make sense to repeat any of that. So we took those out. So I think the next section is page 40, General Plan Administration and Maintenance. There's really nothing controversial about this. We basically put this in, and it may be a requirement, and it's also a good idea if you put it in as a policy, then it allows the county to make sure it allocates the necessary funding to allow for updates to occur. If you don't have a policy like this, sometimes these sort of things get pushed off, right, mm-hmm. or safety elements from 1973. You know, but if we have something that says, hey, you know, the county should have a policy of regularly maintaining its general plan and updating it, right? That allows for the funding to that mm-hmm. to occur.
Mm-hmm. So how are you going to, I'm looking at policy 11.1.
Oh, we're on page 41, yes, sir.
Well, the curtailment of water use, which is right on the horizon. There can be a lot of properties that will not be financially viable because they've lost the water use, mm-hmm. even though there's on financial. So does that automatically trigger that property changing from AG1 to AG2 when it's shut out here?
We have in our land use element a mechanism, I think it was earlier, like if your land is zoned AG1, but it shouldn't be, we have the
inability to irrigate to trigger going from prime to AG2. Well, that
down.
You're hitting on the same question that I have, mm-hmm. because in order to change the Scott Valley area plan, it has to go through a committee, mm-hmm. a reread, a redraft, back to the community and voted upon by the community. My question is, perhaps for council, the land plan is its own document. If we have in the general plan a mechanism to downgrade a parcel from AG1 to AG2, does that by default carry over to the Scott Valley land plan where the same mechanism is used to downgrade AG1 to AG2, or does it have to occur in both documents to be applied to Scott Valley?
Well, I know the Scott, whatever adopted here, the Scott Valley plan is supposed to end up conforming to it.
But it can be more restrictive also. And that's why I asked the question, would that downgrade mechanism apply to it as well, or does it have to be reapproved with similar language to downgrade? Does our general plan land use zoning mechanism apply? That is it direct, or are they two standalone in that sense?
Well, if it's gonna, it, I guess it depends on whether it's considered in conflict. I'm not totally sure. I'd almost like to get back to you on this one as well.
So, Commissioner Rao, on page 34, we specifically talk about the area plans, and adopted area plans have to be consistent with the general plan, right? And any area plan is going to have to be considered an amendment to the land use element. And I think that's usually how it's laid out in other counties as well. It's like the general plan is always going to have primacy. Specific areas can have different plans, and those plans will be used. But once you update a general plan, if that general plan is the most recent update and it's changing something that an older area plan had, you know, I would think that the newer version would control until that older plan is updated.
Okay, here's where I would come back. Area plans function similarly in relationship to general plans as state laws do to federal laws, and county laws relate or interact with state laws. As you get smaller and more specific, you can become more restrictive, but you cannot become more open or less restrictive. And that's why I asked the council on this. We have a we are, Scott Valley Land Plan, more restrictive than the county in terms of size of ag land. We're at 80-40, whereas the county is 40-20. But does a mechanism for changing from AG1 to AG2 apply to an area plan? Because that is not a restrictive, less restrictive argument. That is how something goes from one zone to the other. Because I know we do have a bit of a precedent. Project 8-7 years ago, maybe 6, I think it was pre-COVID, Bobby Dawes ended up dividing his place and broke it down, and he went through the process of getting it resurveyed, and portions of that were downgraded from AG1 to AG2.
Because you found some...
Yep, because of the way that it changed, percentage of the soil, etc., and ability to irrigate. We allowed the downgrade AG1 to AG2. We have a precedent that allows for that. I'm just wanting to make sure, does our mechanism, inability to irrigate, carry over to the land plan? Inability to irrigate, okay, you can use that as a viable argument to downgrade from AG1 to AG2 in Scott Valley.
It does, because, right, the general plan and our zoning code provides a process for land throughout the county that's AG1, that's been misnomed, to be reclassified as AG2. So when I looked at the Scott Valley area plan, it did not have a mechanism that was different from what we're proposing, right? So it wouldn't even be in conflict. And does that make sense? Like, the AG1, AG2 reduction would be applicable to the Scott Valley area as well.
Well, I know it's applicable, but the definition of prime and non-prime is different from the land plan to the general plan.
Yes, and that's what 41 is. If you look, like, it's specifically addressing the Scott Valley area. Like, for the Scott Valley area, these policies will apply. 11.1 applies, right? And this is taken from what's existing in the Scott Valley area plan.
I get that, and we're starting to have circular argument. Okay. I would like council, because I'm pretty sure council understands my question, and to come back, because this may be a case where we need to add language in, probably it would be in 11.1, if council says it's appropriate, where there would be a reference to determination of AG1 to AG2 as it relates to prime, non-prime ag and the Scott Valley land plan, that inability to irrigate is a finding to allow for a downgrade.
Can I ask a question? So are you saying that if, in Bobby Dawes' case, if it was Bobby Smith from LA, that would have never happened, but anyway, that if you downgrade to Ag 2, that then you could not have to comply with the 80-acre minimum?
That allowed him to break an 80 into 240s.
Right.
Well, it ended up being a 90 into a 48.
Right. Right. What, don't you agree if that was Bobby Smith from LA, that wouldn't have gone through?
I think it would have gone through.
Well,
because
it actually, the spirit of the Scott Valley plan, it broke that.
Yes and no. The other thing to keep in mind, though, is that right next to him is where, in the Scott Valley land plan, it specifically allows for the breakdown of even smaller parcels from west of his property line all the way to the city of Fort Jones. It allows for smaller parcels.
That wasn't farming land.
None of it really is. I mean, John Oster's old place grows pasture for Buffy Fisher.
Yes.
And
it's your guys' thing. Yeah. All I'm saying, I hate to see this thing that because we can't make money farming, that we can split them up in these little ranchettes. And
what else are we going to do?
We got to do something with the property to pay the taxes.
I'm telling you.
I know, but it's
yeah. I get what you're saying, but at the same time, if we have a state that is taking away the ability to generate a living, then the property owner needs to have the ability to find a way to make money.
Because otherwise what's happening is...
Excuse me, just a moment. Mr. Phelps?
We did address this on page 27 in a previous meeting, which I shared with Commissioner Bell. Right, disproving a prime agricultural land designation, and I think the commission did tell us to add lack of water as one of those.
No, I agree we did that. My question, though, for council is that is with the general plan. How does that interact with an area plan?
I see.
Are they on equal footing and we follow the same process, or does something different need to happen?
Yeah.
And if it is the same, then we need to add language here in 11.1 that goes back and recognizes that language previously stated as it relates to prime and non-prime.
Commissioner Lindler?
Yeah. I don't know if you've jumped ahead, but with this discussion is like on page 92 is policy definitions. I don't know if you've gotten that far, but it talks about prime ag land defined.
As in the general plan, yes.
Okay. It's just the...
This is an area plan because there's talk.
The Scott Valley plan.
Right. And we've had discussions here and encouraged McLeod area to come up with their own area plan. They haven't done it yet, but it would solve a lot of the county's issues. And when we get a hot button project down there, we say, hey, meet as a community and develop your own area plan. Mm-hmm. And so there may be more area plans.
Sure.
What is that relationship? So, to be clear.
Yeah.